It's very positive reinforcement based. I try to allow a lot of room for, you know, if they make a mistake, it's like, okay, well, that's fine. I'm not going to punish you for it. We're just going to focus on what went well.
Welcome to the Horse Trailer Post podcast, the show where we cover anything and everything related to the horse trailer industry. I'm your host, Brad Heath, owner and operator of Double B Trailers. With over 25 years of experience in the horse industry, I'm excited to bring you the latest news, tips, and insights into everything equine. Can't wait to share my passion for horses and horse safety with all of you. So saddle up and join me every other week for the Horse Trailer Post podcast.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Caleb, and I'm your guest host this week. And on the podcast, we have Julia Williamson. She is from the Horse Center, and we just want to welcome you to the podcast, the Horse Trailer Post.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So, Julia, for our listeners who might be unfamiliar with your work or maybe haven't seen you teaching horses how to dance, could you introduce yourself and explain your unique approach to horse training?
Yeah, sure. So most people on the internet from my social media accounts and stuff like that, they know me more from my like trick training and liberty training stuff that I do. In my own community, my extra training community with my clients, I'm more known for working with horses that have behavior issues, or they come with some history, or they are rescues, or they are unhandled. So that's kind of my main focus of my daily work.
Gotcha. So we know every horse is unique. How do you adapt your methods to respect the individual nature of each horse that you work with?
It always depends on the horse's personality. So I can never, people tell me what's going on with their horse, but I cannot like tell them when I'm sitting at home and I haven't worked with a horse, okay, we're going to do like this approach. And, you know, I can't really set up a 6-point bullet plan from afar. So usually just it happens during me being exposed to the horse and getting a feeling for the horse. And since every horse learns different, sometimes, you know, I can do a lot of positive reinforcement, and sometimes their negative reinforcement history of pressure and release is just so present that I have to dial more into that. So I don't directly throw the horse's world upside down and all of a sudden it's like, well, what language are you speaking? Because I don't know how you're communicating anymore, you know? So you always have to just see what the horse brings to the table, and also how they learn, how they process stuff, and like how long can they focus, and when's the point where they dial out and they're like, well, I can't take any information in anymore. So it's very individual with every horse coming in.
Man, that sounds like it could be super challenging just to be able to figure out like kind of a little on the fly, maybe, because you're not really being able to get into it until you actually see the horse, meet with the horse, and kind of get a feel for what they're like.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I have a feeling, I'm like, okay, well, I think we can do like certain things, and the horse arrives and I'm like, oh dang, there's all these other problems that I wasn't aware of. So we can start at -500 and then we can go to whatever the owner thought might have been the main issue, you know.
It's like somebody bringing in a car to the shop and they're like, yeah, I just have a flat tire. And then you get in there and they're like, their oil's leaking and the lights are out and all kinds of stuff going on.
And yeah, there's a bunch of underlying issues that need addressed first before we can fix the other stuff.
Well, can you remember, or just like, were you willing to share a particular challenge maybe you've encountered with a difficult horse and kind of how you navigated through that? Anything kind of come to mind?
Yeah, a pretty repetitive one would be in my work that you have a shutdown horse, for example, and they had some history of either, doesn't necessarily need to be abused, but maybe they were just overwhelmed the way they were trained in the past. So they are very shut down, they're not really responsive. And then you have to be aware when you step in and you pull them out of that shutdown that it's not always pretty. And usually after shutdown, they're not directly happy and like full of themselves, like, oftentimes there's anger attached to like their past and they have aggression built up and stuff like that. So when you unbuckle this shutdown mode, you have to be ready to like face anger and stuff like that that you might have never thought about before. And then you need to be able in a position to like not take it personal and to keep everyone safe. And then, you know, just slowly manage and work your way through it without that anyone gets hurt, and you can still modify the behavior.
Yeah, man, just really going into the psychology of the horse there. Wow. Yeah. Well, like, I guess, do you have a situation or like have you seen where abuse is one of those common reasons why, people come to you, like if they have a horse that has been previously abused, or is that really not as common as people might would think?
The thing is that abuse is always a matter of the context of the culture that we are in, or even like just the area of the country that we are living in. So when you say abuse, it's always like, well, for that person, it's not abuse because, they have to be disciplined. And for the other person, it's like, that's definitely abuse and he should not even own a horse, But I think abuse itself is like actual abuse where someone has like, they want to hurt the animal is pretty rare, actually.
Gotcha.
Oftentimes, the abuse, it's more like a lack of knowledge. The person didn't know better, or someone told them to use a certain training tool or to do something. So I'm always very focused on that knowledge saves our horses or helps us. Knowledge is so important in what we do that we can protect ourselves and our horses and everything.
Gotcha. So I know, like, talking about like psychology and things of the horse, sure, horses have anxiety just like humans do. And sometimes that anxiety kind of rears its head in different behavioral patterns like biting, rearing, anything like fear. Is that something that you encounter a lot? And kind of like, what would you say is the main root to these behaviors if it's not like previous, different types of abuse, I guess?
Until it gets to the point when a horse is at a point already that they start rearing and striking out and biting and attacking and like they get really loud and offensive in their body language, they're literally at a point that they're screaming for for help. Like, this is my last instance, that's as loud as I can get with you. So like, can you like look into what's going on here? So until it gets to that point, there's like a thousand steps ahead of that that might have already signaled that it's going to get worse. It's, no one's going to look at what's going on. And oftentimes, again, it's like not knowing how to handle the horse in the first place, or I don't know, biting. I don't know. You saddle the horse starts biting. Like they want to bite you in the side, like in your ribs and stuff. And underlying issues could be, I don't know, the horse has ulcers, it's a bad saddle fit, someone just never really taught this horse to be saddled, and they just throw a saddle on and almost cinch the horse in half because they just cinched directly everything down. And so there's so many underlying issues usually underneath this big behavior that we get to see when it's like, oh gosh, I don't know what to do. My horse is rearing, striking out, and no one wants to touch him anymore. Like, there's so much other stuff going on beforehand. We just have to learn to like dial in and listen and like train our eye and understand our horses better.
Gotcha. So, I mean, makes sense. You got things like just with your own body, like if you know something's not right, you don't want to wait till you get to the point of no return, or if you require like major surgery or something like that to remedy something that could have been fixed with just modifying the way that you live every day.
Like your diet or your general life, like your routines and stuff.
Man, is that something like, I'm guessing that's something you've encountered quite a bit because you speak on it pretty in depth. Is that something that you find just a lot of it is more or less, this is a kind of like a negative connotated word, but like ignorance, where people just don't know, and that's what kind of leads to these things.
Oftentimes it actually is. And like I said, it's rare that people actually, they don't want to hurt their animals. Most of the people that come to me, they're like, we just want to love our horse and we just want to have a good time. And then the knowledge is just missing because, they did never had the opportunity to educate themselves, or whoever was in their inner circle of being able to educate them just didn't have the quality of knowledge. So yeah, like knowledge is just so important that you learn to understand what's going on actually.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you would, this is one of those things like people just like they love the horse and different. It's like, I guess it'd be like you can't really just jump into it thinking it's going to be a hobby because it's a lot more involved. And I think that may be probably what some people's error is that they just go into it with a hobby mindset. It's
We
definitely
think
not
it's so
that.
easy,
No.
especially right now. I mean, there's shows like Yellowstone coming up, and people are like, oh, I'm just gonna buy a horse, and they don't know all the other stuff that plays into it, just from horse keeping and diet and all that other stuff. It's like, it's not a dirt bike that you can just put away, and even a dirt bike needs maintenance, It's like,
Yes, definitely. I think you're right with like the Yellowstone, and that's become it's it's becoming more of like a cultural trend, and like the hip thing to do is to be in the Western outfits and have horses and do those things. But you don't really see the nitty gritty that goes into it and the many, many hours that it takes to properly take care of the horse and do all those things. So hadn't really thought about that, but you make a very good point about like the Yellowstone specifically. That's really, we see that's how it goes.
Yeah.
It flows. So in your experience, I'm sure you've worked with numerous breeds of different horses. Have you noticed, any particular breeds that respond especially well to your training approach, or perhaps any that maybe offer like unique challenges and such?
Not breed specific, because my entire training program is very, I adjusted to the background of the horse already. So if I know, I don't know, I have them like an off the track thoroughbred, I know, they are bred to perform. Like everything in their DNA tells them to go as long and as fast as they can. And it's harder to modify their behavior, but it's generally by nature, a hot horse, it's like a Ferrari, now you want to take this and turn it into this random trail horse that's just going to plot down the trail. It's like, how much can we actually modify it? Because there's just stuff inside of the horse that tells them to do a way different job in their life, so I consider that already. And I try to adjust everything always depending on, consider what does the horse owner want to do in the future when they get the horse back? Like, what's the horse owner's goal and how much can the horse do and how athletic they are. And so that's already considered. What for me is new, because I'm originally from Germany and I was never exposed before I came here a couple of years back to actually wild and unhandled horses. So that was an entire different topic for me to work with a Mustang who has never seen a human or just from afar or whatever when there's someone hiking, but dealing with a horse whose entire nervous system is working way differently, not differently on the layers, but it's my Mustangs out in the pasture, they are the first ones that pop up their head when there's a coyote hundreds of feet away, and they are darn pointing their ears forward, and then 2 minutes later all my domesticated horses are what's going on, who's walking where, they're just so dialed in with their entire environment. So that was definitely different to get to know all of the layers from wild and unhandled.
So is that something you say you're from Germany? Is that something in Germany you don't really see a whole lot of? It's more domesticated?
Yeah. So we have a couple. There's an area where we have the original, basically our wild horses, the Prawatsky horses that are, that used to be in that area, but they are just being reestablished and they are just out there and they have their breeding program. But it's not like you go there and you get your Mustang and you train, and that's not the intent of that at all. They're just trying to keep that breed alive there. So unhandled for us was you bring the 2-year-old in and it's you start kind of halter breaking them, but still they always have handling, you catch them from that and you look at their feet and maybe they need some medication. So it's not wild. They were all domesticated.
Man. Yeah. I guess it's kind of like jumping into the wild, wild west a little bit for you doing all that.
Sure was.
Man. In your experience, do you have any, you say you kind of modify your approach to each individual horse and kind of go through it that way. Is there any favorite tool or technique that you particularly find effective in your training or something that you kind of use more often than not?
Yeah. Tool, not necessary. I'm very big on not, I don't use sight reins or anything, draw reins or any of that. I teach my horses to learn to use their body correctly and work there step by step. And I don't, there's so many biomechanically things that go wrong if you just tie a horse's head down, and they learn more out of avoiding pressure than actually learning to gather themselves correctly up and get into a true connection and collection. But I do want to say, every time I try to explain what I'm doing here, it's very positive reinforcement based. I try to allow a lot of room for, if they make a mistake, it's that's fine. I'm not going to punish you for it. We're just going to focus on what went well. And then we just, build upon that instead of being punishment based or any of that. So especially if you dive deeper into that, the entire using a marker signal with the horse has changed my world, especially when it comes to rescues and horses that are extremely anxious and fearful, to kind of teach them and explain them they're in a safe space, because pressure is perceived by every horse in a different way. And I'm not saying it's a bad way to train, because I still apply pressure and release, because every horse owner needs to be able to use it. And, you know, horses are in different environments, your furry is going to handle them and all of that. But for some horses, a little bit of pressure can go a long ways, you know, and they're like, oh, I don't know what to do anymore. And then they're already in fight and flight. And once they're up there, it's like, there's no learning effect anymore. So like keeping the environment really quiet and calm and focusing on the positive has changed my own training.
Man, you know what? This is a very bad analogy, but that sounds exactly what my wife and I are dealing with our four-year-old.
Yeah.
It's just like going through and, you know, they're kind of like they go through and they have to have that positive reinforcement, because they're learning so much at once. Their brains are fully, you know, developing. And, you know, it's neat to be able to see that apply to other areas too. So.
Yeah. And you might think, oh, it's ridiculous that I have to reinforce this tiny step. Like, why would I need to tell them, you know? But for them, it's so important. So it's that compassion that you need in those moments.
Yeah, it makes a huge deal. Because, I mean, the horses, they can pick up on that. They can pick up on your emotions and, you know, how you're, if you're doing something compassionately or out of like anger or something that's, you know, not nice. So,
yeah.
In horse training, I'm assuming this is probably a challenging career for you. What keeps you motivated in doing that and continuing to do that? And, you know, what do you find, I guess, the most rewarding in your work that you do?
Yeah, I think it's what basically 99% of us equestrians connect, is this, like, you constantly have to eat humble pie, and it's like, you think you got it figured out, and then it's like, what do I know about horses? Like nothing worked out today, you know? Like, you always start, you get humbled if something doesn't really work out. And then also just a variety of, every horse is different, every situation is new. And even if you have one horse that you have for 20 years, there's so many different topics that pop up along the ways that it's like, you know, so many big horse trainers in the past decades have always talked about. It's more about your own personal development and, you know, getting smarter and more wiser, and like working on yourself, and how do you control your own emotions, and like what do you reflect to the world, and all of these layers in between that have nothing to do with the horse, really. It's all about your own development. So I think that's a big part that keeps me going, just this, it can be better. I know I can do better than this, you know? Yeah. Just, yeah.
Nice. That keeps you like knowing there's more to attain to, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. So you've worked with numerous horses and trained all these different and had these different like unique individual approaches. Is there like one particular horse, you know, that you have tried to train and work with and it has like tested your skill and your patience and like ever like made you want to just give it up and move on to something else? Has there ever been a time where you've encountered anything like that?
Yeah, I would say there's a couple of horses that I had moments like that. You know, I mean, you start questioning, you're like, oh, I've been putting so much work into this and so much time, and we've made such good progress. Now we're stuck, and it's like, is it worth it? You know, the standard saying of like, there's too many good horses to waste your time on this one. But what I found with most of these situations, it usually gets really tough and like just sticky, and you're like desperate, and you're like, I don't know what else to do, right before you make that progression again. So usually it's just, I just stick with a damn plan, and like, you've got it figured out. And then like a couple of sessions later, you're like, I don't even know what I was so upset about.
Yes, like, you have like the aha, like the breakthrough.
Yeah. You just have to like stick with a damn plan. And then eventually you kind of figure yourself out. But in regards to the specific horse, who already comes to my mind is Red Sands. He's a Spanish Barb Stallion that I took on. And he's also part of the breeding recovery program, because the Spanish Barbs are endangered and there's like less than 2,000 worldwide left. And I took him on and I wanted to at least halt a break him. I don't even have him in mind yet that I want to ride him. I just want him to be able to be handled for the breeding program. But he is the most guarded horse that I've ever met. There is no, we've been doing this for a year and he's still, every time you step into his corral, it's like you're looking at him the first time. He has such a hard time like letting his guard down, and you give them everything to like open up this gate to like, hey, you can trust me, and like reassure him constantly. And every time he would be like, I don't know about that. Like, he always keeps questioning him. He makes progress, but still he's still holding on to these walls. And he's just one of these most reactive horses that I've ever worked with. So he's definitely one of those horses that will always stick in my memories with how guarded he is.
Sounds like if you ever get past that point, that's going to be like your crowning achievement.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be marked in the calendar.
Like, you celebrate that every year, have an anniversary of that.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so you offer, you know, a range of services from coaching calls to classical dressage training. Can you give our listeners and viewers kind of an overview of who these services are ideally suited for and how they can get in touch with you if they're interested in, you know, collaborating or learning more about you and your business?
Yeah. So my entire background, so my upbringing was anything English. So it was show jumping, dressage, cross country, that kind of stuff. So that's what my fundamentals are still based on, like the old school German training scale, you know, building everything step by step. And then eventually we build up to the collection. So that's what everything's based on. But these days, basically everything is cherry picked from all kinds of disciplines and how to train a horse properly and keep them healthy for as long as we can. So when someone asks me what discipline I ride, it's like, well, it's based on dressage, but I'm riding a horse. Like, I just want a healthy, well-balanced, well-communicating and understanding and reliable horse. Like, there is no discipline really attached when you like narrow it down. And my clients are very, they want to learn. They have this thirst for like, okay, I want to get better. And like, this is the problem with my horse, and I would like you to work through it, but please tell me what I have to change and like, how can I get better? So my clients are not the type of, there's my horse, fix it, I'm going to come pick it up in 3 months. And, you know, that type of deal. My clients are very involved in the training progress. And that's actually how my social media started out, because I would always record everything that I was doing. It's something that I learned from one of my mentors. Like, she would put a camera up in the corner of the arena, and she would record everything she did with the horses. And when I asked her, I'm like, why do you record everything? Because to me back then, it was weird. Like, who records themselves? It's really odd. And she was like, no, well, I do it to call myself out on my own nonsense that I'm doing. Like, you don't always catch everything that didn't work out, or, you know, like, I don't know, if the horse spooks or runs off or you get blocked off or something. She would go back and be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, I was sitting funny or something way back in the pasture spooked them, or so that you don't start just labeling situations. I'm like, oh, you was just, I don't know, stupid that day. You know, like, there's always a reason to it. So that's how involved I got my clients involved. I would record everything and I would be like, hey, this is what we've been doing. That's how bad the original behavior was. And that's what I'm encountering right now. And at the end of the session, we got to this point. So I could really involve them. And that's what we were doing. That's how it looks. This might take longer than what we were planning on. Or, oh, well, you can pick them up in 2 weeks. I don't think it's a big issue. So, yeah, my clients are very, they want to get better and they want to be involved and they want to learn. That's my type of people that usually come out here and they watch me train and they, you know, they just want to learn to get better in being a horseman, a horsewoman.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, and the video recordings definitely, I'm sure, for one, they help you track progress for these horses for their owners. And then also, like you said, for yourself, memory. My memory is horrible and I can't remember sometimes what I ate yesterday. So being able to like look back in that, you can kind of pinpoint like your mentor did. Definitely very good idea to do. So as far as like getting in touch with you, is there a particular way that you like for folks to do that? Or, you know, just reach out on your website, which we can link below this, the video and everything.
Yeah. The best way right now is actually my social media. And it's under dash the horse center. I couldn't do the horse center because it was already taken. So you have to put an under dash in there. And then from there, everything is linked, my website and everything. If you're really inquiring for training and everything, the best way is to just hit my website link and fill in the contact form and send me an email, because not all messages on Instagram get through to me. There's a lot of stuff that just gets filtered out right off the bat from just the amount of inquiries I get there.
Gotcha. Perfect. Yeah. So we'll also put your social media handles in the description as well. So lastly, just one more thing. you know, for horse owners who might currently be struggling with the, you know, particular behavioral issue, what immediate step or kind of mindset shift would you recommend for them to take, like right now?
One thing that I tell basically everyone, and everyone's probably over it already, is that behavior doesn't just randomly happen. There's always a reason behind it. And it's not necessarily that you have to be like, okay, I've got a deep dive into the last 20 years of the horse, but just know behavior has a reason. And the horse's brain is not developed to be, I don't know, calculating or sneaky or intentionally being wanting to be bad or stuff like that. There's something going on in the first place, and then you can break it down from there. So understanding behavior is not random, and then also learning to understand how horses communicate. It's just such a big, important thing to avoid miscommunication and problems right off the bat.
Nice. Well, thank you so much, Julia, for joining me today on the Horse Trailer Post. We appreciate it, and thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks.